Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now, Donald Trump yesterday pointed the blame for the Ukrainian war squarely at the door of three people: Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, former President Joe Biden, and Russian President Vladimir Putin. But at the same time, he wanted to stay well clear of laying too much blame on Russia. In a moment, we'll speak to John O'Brien of Maynooth University to talk about Trump's continuing pivot to Russia and the continuing civilian casualties. But first, Trump was asked on Air Force One on Monday night for a reaction to Sunday's attack in Sumy, which killed at least 34 people and injured 117 more.
And also, yes.
Do you have a reaction to Russia's Palm Sunday attack?
I think it was terrible, and I was told they made a mistake. But I think it's a horrible thing. I think the whole war is a horrible thing. I think the war is, for that war to have started, is an abuse of power. This country would have never allowed that war to have started if I were president. That war is a shame. Millions of people are dead that should be alive. Cities are being destroyed all over Ukraine. The whole culture is gone. It's very severely hurt. You know, the chapels, the churches, the spirals, all of the things that they had in Ukraine were among the most beautiful anywhere in the world. Most of them are knocked down and blown up into a million pieces. But most importantly, you have millions of people dead that shouldn't be dead. Think of it. Think of what a rigged election means. We would have had we wouldn't have had the war in Ukraine. We wouldn't have had the Russia-Ukraine situation. We wouldn't have had October 7th, Israel, the Middle East. We wouldn't have had inflation. We wouldn't have had the most embarrassing day or period in the history of our country. That's Afghanistan, one of the most embarrassing moments in the history of our country, Afghanistan. All of these things wouldn't have taken place. Think of it. We wouldn't have had inflation. But millions of people would be alive, except for the fact that the election were rigged, because that war would have never started, and Putin never would have started that war. This is Biden's war. This is not my war. I've been here for a very short period of time. This is a war that was under Biden. He gave him billions and billions of dollars. He should have never allowed, if he had any brain, which he didn't have and doesn't have, and now it's being proven, he wouldn't have allowed that war to start. I would have absolutely not. That war would never have taken place. But remember this. This is Biden's war. I'm just trying to get it stopped so that we can save a lot of lives. They happen to be Ukrainian and Russian lives.
So in claiming that Russia's attack on Sumy was a mistake, or so he says he was told, Trump then just proceeded to air more 2020 election grievances. And yesterday in the Oval Office, accompanied by the president of El Salvador, he was asked about his assertion that the strike was a mistake, and he had this response.
The mistake was letting the war happen. If Biden were competent, and if Zelensky were competent, and I don't know that he is, we had a rough session with this guy over here. He just kept asking for more and more. That war should have never been allowed to happen. That war, I went 4 years and Putin wouldn't even bring it up. And as soon as the election was rigged and I wasn't here, that war started. There was no way that war should have been allowed to happen. And Biden should have stopped it. And you take a look at Putin. I'm not saying anybody's an angel, but I will tell you, I went 4 years and it wasn't even a question. He would never, and I told him, don't do it. You're not going to do it. And it was the apple of his eye, but there was no way that he would have done it. So now what do? You get a country where 25% of its land is gone and the best locations, where millions of people are killed. You know, you haven't reported accurately the death. And this was Biden's war, and I'm trying to stop it.
He was then asked if he spoke to President Zelensky, who has asked to purchase more missiles.
He's always looking to purchase missiles, you know. He's against... Listen, when you start a war, you got to know that you can win the war, right? You don't start a war against somebody that's 20 times your size and then hope that people give you some missiles. If we didn't give them what we gave, remember, I gave them javelins. That's how they won their first big battle with the tanks that got stuck in the mud, and they took them out with javelins. They have an expression that Obama at the time, Obama gave them sheets and Trump gave them javelins. But just something that should have never happened. It's a really shame.
It was interesting looking at the El Salvadoran president sitting beside him, President Bukele. He wasn't wearing a collar and tie. He was there in some sort of a suit and a T-shirt, it looked like. Anyway, no criticism from the Trump regime of the El Salvadoran president. Now, we have to clarify that Russia invaded Ukraine on the 24th of February, 2022. Ukraine did not start the war. I'm joined now by John O'Brennan, Professor of European Politics and Jean Monnet Chair of European Integration at Maynooth University. John, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, when you hear Trump going on about this, there are three possibilities. One, that he is grossly ill-informed by those around him. One, that's number one. Number two, that he is compromised in some way by the Russians. Or number three, that he's simply being vindictive because Zelensky refused to cooperate with him in targeting Biden during the election campaign.
Well, I think it's quite possible that it's a combination of all those things. Certainly in the case of the 2020 campaign, Zelensky had only been elected in April 2019, and almost immediately Trump's people tried to get him to dig up dirt on Biden. And because Zelensky refused, Trump seems to have held this against him, as he does anything that anybody does that isn't completely consistent with what he wants. So I think that's probably part of this. But the other thing that's very evident when you listen to those clips, it's not just that Trump is completely on Russia's side in all of this. He absolutely refuses to acknowledge that Russia did not just invade in 2022 under Biden's watch. The first invasion happened in 2014. And Russia, you may recall at that time, sent in the so-called Little Green Men into Crimea. They brought down a Malaysian Airlines plane, killing 300 innocent people. And all through Trump's presidency for those 4 years, Russia was in Ukraine fighting Ukrainians. So the notion that this is somehow Biden's war and Biden and Zelensky's fault is so obviously a lie, but he keeps repeating it. And he does that, I'm sure, for domestic reasons in the United States. I think what he wants, and he doesn't care how this happens, is a win. And he wants to be perceived as the tough guy peacemaker who brought the two sides together.
Now, to see his advocate going to Putin and almost like in awe of the man that is Vladimir Putin was almost sick-making, you know, the acquiescence of the Americans to what looked on photographically as the superior might of Russia, when America, for all its ills, is still the most powerful nation on earth.
Yeah, it is astonishing to see what Witkoff did last week. But again, it's very consistent with the things that he has done and the things he has said over the last months and all the things that Trump has said as well. They literally repeat propaganda lines written in the Kremlin. Witkoff, for example, suggests or had suggested at an earlier point that referendums had been held in all of the occupied territories. And that means that those parts of Ukraine effectively voted to be part of Russia. Nothing could be further from the truth. Those sham referendums were held with Russian soldiers with AK-47s literally placed beside ballot boxes. But
What makes a leader? It's a tough question, but this we know for sure. True leaders lead by example. They take risks and plunge into life with determination. And for real leaders, there's a symbol of high adrenaline and high achievement, the Range Rover Sport. The Range Rover Sport redefines sporting luxury with a dramatic modern design that meets a distinctive sporting character. And a well-appointed cabin brings a sense of occasion to every drive. The active noise cancellation feature filters out unwanted sound, making the cabin a cocoon-like sanctuary. Optional PM 2.5 filtration reduces odors, bacteria, and allergens, while CO2 management enhances the wellness of everyone on board. Plus, you can curate the mood of every journey with configurable cabin lighting and bring a hint of refinement to every drive with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Build your Range Rover Sport at rangerover.com/US/sport. That's rangerover.com/US/sport.
You know, but now, is Witkoff a fool as well?
Well, I think that's a very open question and an interesting one, but he is certainly doing Trump's bidding and doing Putin's bidding in respect of Ukraine. Almost everything that he has said has reinforced Russian narratives of different kinds about the war and what's going on in Ukraine.
Now, the question of compromised, I mean, we talk about him being ill-informed, and that's, you know, who's ill-informing him? Who is forcing this agenda, whether it's anti-Harvard or anti the Supreme Court or whatever it might be, there are people around him. I mean, the document they sent to Harvard, for example, was so complex, it could not possibly have been written by Donald Trump. And we know that he doesn't read very much, so he may not even be aware of its true content. So somebody within his administration or close to him is writing this sort of stuff. I mean, the president has been captured by certain people, but who are they?
Well, I think the Harvard story is a very interesting one because it shows, again, the tactics they employ, which is bullying and intimidation. And it's interesting that unlike Columbia University, which got a similar communication from the Trump administration about 5 or 6 weeks ago, Harvard is not giving in. And its president has come out and made a very muscular statement saying that academic integrity cannot be challenged in this way, and the government has no business interfering with universities. But that's the exception, and Harvard can do that, Pat, because it has this vast endowment. It's probably calculating that they'll be able to ride out this storm. But most mid-level universities are not in that position, and they're coming under enormous pressure. And I think what you saw yesterday with that and with Trump hand in hand with the dictator of El Salvador, saying that they basically that he was not going to abide by the Supreme Court ruling on the one of the people they had sent to El Salvador. The Supreme Court basically said you must bring him back. And they're basically now refusing to abide by Supreme Court decisions. So this is all the makings of a constitutional crisis domestically in the United States. And I think that's one of the reasons Trump desperately wants a win in Ukraine, because he gets to project himself as this potentially Nobel Prize winning peacemaker. And it diverts attention from what they're doing from the domestic agenda.
But there's no way he'll get a Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. Everyone, including the Nobel people, will see through what he's at. He wants what Obama got, even though Obama probably didn't deserve it. He got the Nobel Peace Prize. But he has one of those. I want one of those too. It's as simple as that with a simple personality.
That's very true. I think Obama was awarded it very prematurely and perhaps shouldn't have got it. But remember, in the past, the Nobel Committee gave a prize to Henry Kissinger, who for many people is one of the greatest warmongers of the modern era and certainly had a lot of blood in his hands. Now, I think that is what Trump is aiming for. But the other thing we should keep in mind is that his worldview is so similar to that of Vladimir Putin's. He believes in strongman authoritarian governance, both at home and abroad. He believes that he should have the right to rule almost like a king or an emperor. It is very likely that they're going to try and engineer some method by which they'll opt for or try and get a third term, which will deepen the constitutional crisis in the US. But the most important thing for Ukraine, I think, and the really dangerous thing is Trump believes exactly as Putin does in spheres of influence, and that Russia has a natural right to dominate its neighbor. And if that means giving Russia everything it wants in peace talks, then that's what they're prepared to do.
Now, going back to the third of those three elements I mentioned about Trump, ill-informed, vindictive, or compromised, it's thought by many people that he is a Russian asset, whether he was recruited as such or whether unwittingly he is one, because he owes a debt of gratitude for bailing him out so many times to Russian money. Is it possible that that alone would allow him to see the destruction of a sovereign country that is Ukraine simply because the Russians paid him a few million dollars? Is it possible?
Well, I think it's probably a combination of those three things that you highlighted. But for my part, I have to say, Pat, I have always believed the allegation that were cited in Christopher Steele's now infamous dossier. That was about the so-called pee-pee tape and all of that. You recall that when Trump, when the allegations were made public, Trump came out and said, "Do you really think I'd be that stupid?" And of course, all of us said, "Yes, you're literally the only person who would be that arrogant and stupid not to understand that the Russians over the last 70 or 80 years bugged every single hotel room that a foreigner was occupying in Moscow and in St. Petersburg and elsewhere." And there's also evidence, if we go back to his first trip to Moscow in 1987, that the compromat may even have begun as early as that. It's very murky. We may never see substantive evidence emerge, but everything I think that we have seen about Trump consistently supports the view that there may well be some measure of compromat that's part of this dynamic.
Now, one of the things about compromat is that once you use it, it becomes useless. So the idea is to hold this stuff over his head. And if you know anything about compromat, you'll know it's probably rarely actually used. It's used as a threat to make people do your bidding. Moving on, the state of Russia, I mean, Russians don't really know what's going on. There's control of media there. There's a false narrative being peddled. The only thing that will make Russians maybe sit up and take notice would be if their economy falters, because they can feel that themselves. It doesn't matter what state media is saying. If things are going bad, they will feel it.
Yeah, well, part of the analysis that's come out of this conflict has been almost exclusively to focus on Ukraine's difficulties, because it's trying to fend off the Russian invaders and so on. But we sometimes forget that this war has taken an enormous toll on Russia. Russia has probably lost at least 200,000 soldiers dead, up to 700,000 wounded. We know that they have been facing such a recruitment crisis. They've been taking North Korean soldiers, and in recent days, we've seen Chinese mercenaries also captured by the Ukrainian army. Ukraine has been incredibly successful, Pat, at degrading Russian military capacity. Some estimates suggest that they've managed to degrade up to 70% of that military capacity. The Russian Navy is not able to put any ships at all in the Black Sea close to Ukrainian territory. So successful have the Ukrainians been at declawing the Russian Navy. But the other thing is about the Russian economy that I think it could be in real trouble. Where we keep focusing on Ukraine, we should pay more attention to Russia's domestic economy, and in particular, the oil price. At the end of last week, Brent crude was down somewhere below $60 per barrel. Russia probably needs an oil price of at least $100 of a barrel to be able to maintain this war. So if Ukraine can garner enough support from its European allies through the rest of this year, I think there's every possibility we could see an economic collapse in Russia, or Putin forced to introduce conscription in Moscow and St. Petersburg, something that they have absolutely resisted up to now. They could well be forced to do that, and you could well see a real crisis emerging in Russia as a result of all of that.
So finally, we have to look at what Europe can do and is doing. I was reading yesterday that they reckon maybe 2/3 of the munitions that they hope to garner for Ukraine have already been assembled and presumably being passed on. How close are we to the point where Europe supplies Ukraine with the munitions that are needed to withstand the Russians?
Well, there is a gap to be filled for sure, but I think we've seen in the statements by very senior people in Germany, for example, and Kaja Kallas in Brussels, the EU's High Representative for Foreign Policy, that they're prepared to do whatever it takes, and they're prepared to buy military equipment that Ukraine needs from anywhere in the world. There was a bit of resistance to that in the first 2 years of the war, especially from France, but that's finished now. And I think what we are going to see is European states really stepping up in the months to come. And of course, every time you get an outrage, as we saw in Sumy on Sunday, it reinforces the determination in Europe to resist Russian aggression and to give Ukraine whatever it needs. And that's military help, but it's also critically financial help if the Trump administration withdraws all aid to Ukraine, as I expect it will in the weeks to come.
John, finally, I suppose, what are we to make of America allying with Putin, deporting people without any trial, trying to close down academic institutions, penalizing universities, closing the Department of Education? I could go on and on and on and on. I mean, it's extraordinary how this has come about.
It gets worse week by week. If you make the comparison with 1933 in Germany, it took a long time for the Nazis to literally become what we now think of as Nazis. Hitler was quite careful in the way that he operated. The putsch that took place within the ranks of the Nazi Party took place only a year and a half after they came to power. The Nuremberg laws against the Jewish population were only enacted in 1936. And then he turns his attention to foreign affairs and to grabbing the territory of other countries. Well, in 3 months, Trump and his acolytes have done much, much more than the Nazis did to defenestrate democracy in Germany in 1933. And that's, to me, that's just an incredibly tragic but chilling thought, that they have been so successful so far in capturing institutions that have been in place for a couple of hundred years. And to this point, Pat, there seems to be no real opposition from the Democrats emerging. Mm. I wonder what it's going to take for that to happen.
Yeah, well, the fighting oligarchy tour that AOC is involved in, she is, of course, a Democrat. In Utah, packed crowds. In Idaho, packed crowds. And these are very red-leaning states. So perhaps Trump inadvertently has woken a sleeping giant.
Yes, and the thing that will really matter there is not Ukraine or foreign policy, it's recession. And there are a lot of commentators, irrespective of how Trump has pulled back on the tariffs issue in recent days, are predicting that the United States is already in recession, and it could be a recession significantly deeper than 2008. If that happens, Trump will be in deep trouble. But paradoxically, that will, in my view, make him even more tempted to go for foreign policy adventures, because there's a repeated pattern there over the last 200 years with authoritarians. When they get in trouble domestically, they turn their attention to foreign affairs to try and buffer their support and power at home.
Watch out Greenland, watch out Gaza, watch out Panama, in other words. John, thank you very much for joining us. John O'Brennan, Professor of European Politics and Jean Monnet Chair of European Integration at Maynooth University.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.